Scotland have turned it around at Hampden Park.
The option is Sven Cuthbert. She strikes. Goal! Erin Cuthbert!
And it's 2-1!
Fantastic piece of play from Scotland.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Scotland National Team podcast. We're delighted to be joined by Scotland captain Rachel Corsey. Rachel, thanks for coming on the podcast. How have you been?
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I've been very well, thanks.
And you're just out of quarantine again. You seem to be, because you've been dotting around all over the place. How was the latest stint of quarantine for you when you were coming back from Kansas?
Yeah, I feel it's just become part of almost every day now. I spent kind of 8 days in Kansas, so there was a lot of that was under the league rules. And then obviously flew back here and same again. But I think it's just part and parcel of how things are like nowadays. And I think it was good to get some training in at the end of last week and get back to playing football and being around the players. And obviously that's led in nicely to this week. So
how important has that been? Because there's a few fresh faces in the squad as well.
Yeah, I think it was good. I think obviously where Scottish football is at the moment as well, I think the last 2 weeks afforded some of the girls a good opportunity to just be on the balls and to get a good amount of work in. You know, the sessions were demanding, and I think, you know, whilst that can be daunting before you start them, it was a really good feeling to get to the end of them and know that you've put in a lot of good work and we'll get the benefits of that hopefully this week. So and obviously, as you say, there's some new faces, so it was nice for those players to probably have a little introduction before things start this week with everyone arriving.
And nice to spend some time with your girlfriend, Lisa. She's obviously a professional squash player, but with your two lifestyles being obviously the opposite ends of the world, it must be nice to actually spend some time together in what's a pretty uncertain time right now.
Yeah, that's probably been the benefit of all these quarantines and isolation, which I suppose you have to try and take some positives where you can from the current times. But yeah, obviously I've appreciated having an extra spell with her just recently, given that America looms and that will mean an extended time apart, which we're well versed in, but not that makes it necessarily easy. So it was also nice that whilst I was at Birmingham, she was able to change her training environment. Being an individual sport athlete, she has a bit more control over that. So she kind of built an environment that was really good for her down there. So that was nice as well, because it's nice when your lives can combine, but you can still focus on sort of your sporting ambitions as well.
And a lot's changed since we last saw each other, obviously with Shelley leaving as the head coach. What's it been like over the last few months?
Yeah, I think it's been a really hard period for the national team group. I think that's fair. I can speak on behalf of all the girls, and just from the conversations we've had in our group chat, you know, it has been a tough time. I think everybody feels extremely disappointed and feels like it's been a letdown. And I think that's one of the worst feelings as an athlete. It's one that obviously, you know, many of us have experienced before in different capacities. And I think this will be one that will hurt for a long time, because I think we have the players and we had a goal to do better than what we've done. So I think the last few months there's been a lot of reflection, and I think to turn that into a positive, though, I think the outcome has been that we recognise we can, or if you get the privilege to be involved, you know, those players are the ones that are responsible for moving forward and taking us back to a position whereby, you know, we come here and we perform and we get results. I think that's something that we've consistently done during my entire time as a national team player. There's always the next goal, and we've always really pushed so hard to achieve those. But I think it was important that we reflected on what had happened in this qualifying campaign and certainly the last few games, and just acknowledged that we need to probably make some changes as players and take ownership of what we can to make sure that we put ourselves back on track. And obviously there's an opportunity now to play these games, and being back on the pitch is the first thing you want to do, I think, after disappointment. So I think everyone will be really excited to get going into training and bring that into the games.
When you speak about the changes, what are the sort of key things that you've identified that you want to sort of improve on?
I think the environment off the pitch and on it, I think perhaps you don't maybe realise how difficult things are, maybe difficult's the wrong word, but different things are with sort of the COVID parameters, and it probably at times is quite isolated, and your only time spent together is when you're at training. But I think we can probably do a better job of making sure that there's a bit, we have that togetherness, because I think we speak about it all the time. You know, we have a really good group here. I think everyone feels they have sort of friends as well as teammates, and there's a lot of little partnerships on and off the pitch that allow us to express ourselves and how we do, and are the reason why we've done so well in the past. And so I think we've acknowledged that we need to make sure the camp environment is one that is a positive one, and one that allows us to, when we have the time on the pitch, that we can focus on the football. And just, again, you just have to keep looking at little gains you can make in every aspect, you know, defending, on the ball, attacking opportunities. I think we have some great players, and the last few games we haven't got the best out of everybody, and so we want to make sure that as players we give ourselves the best chance to do that.
Now, the World Cup was obviously the aftermath of that was obviously a traumatic experience for a lot of the players, yourself included, but I know you've spoken that you just went straight into your games in America, so you just kind of packaged away the World Cup, focused on the next thing. But then you've also said that when we didn't qualify for the Euros, that this maybe affected you a little more. I'm wondering, as captain, you've obviously had to deal with that yourself personally, but also pick up other people around you. How have you found that sort of situation?
Yeah, that's just something I think that comes with being a senior player, and not even just as a captain. I think you feel responsibility maybe more than some of the younger ones, because you've been here for longer. I think from a personal perspective, I sort of enjoy being someone who people sort of respect and maybe see as someone who can help in certain circumstances. So I think in terms of just offering players a place to feel like they can, you know, speak to you or come to you for help, I think that's just something that I think comes from within. I think it's like the type of person you are. I don't think it's necessarily related to playing football or being captain. I think probably those things come off the back of the fact that I think I'm someone who likes to be in a position whereby I can offer support to those around me. I think that's just maybe part of our nature. And I think I say that, I know there's other players in the group who feel similarly and do similarly. So it's not an isolated role, I don't think.
Why do you think this campaign hasn't gone the way you'd hoped? Because the last two games were, you know, they were difficult, weren't they? Especially the end to that Finland game, the way it happened. I'm sure you've been quoted to say that it's either success or catastrophe. And just with the way, you know, just the way that happened, it must have been difficult to deal with. Why do you think that the last few games haven't gone the way you'd hoped?
Yeah, I think it does feel a bit like that. Being there's that a little bit of that Scottish feeling of we always have to make it dramatic. And when it's great, it's glorious. And when it's not, it feels the greatest sucker punch. I think personally, looking back on the last few games, I think for me, the greatest disappointment was the Portugal one. I think the first Finland game, it was a game that was probably the first game under pressure that we'd had maybe for a little while. And it was a game that whether we won, lost, or had it been a draw, it wasn't going to lead to the direct outcome of the group. So we obviously had the intentions to win it. We were away from home, and I think we played okay that game. But I think we knew at the end of it that we'd disappointed ourselves in the nature of how we'd played in certain spells of the game. But we knew everything was still in our control. We still felt very good about the campaign. Everything was fine. I think the Portugal game was the one that was the greatest disappointment to me, because it was firstly an opportunity to bounce back. And I think we, in the past, we've always done that. And I don't think the manner in which we played reflected that. And that was a unique feeling for this group, because we always, I think, you never sort of can question that. You never can doubt whether that was everyone's best effort. I'm not pointing fingers, and I was part of that. We all were, and we just came away feeling we hadn't played as nowhere near as well as we could have, and the result reflected that. And then there was a little bit of, I wouldn't say panic, but then there was real pressure because now all of a sudden it was do or die. And the next game was obviously against Finland again, who were the second seeds. They're a team we've played a number of times and know are a good team. So that kind of changed the dynamic, I think, and all of a sudden the pressure felt a little different. I actually thought the way we conducted ourselves in the last game against Finland was probably some of the best we've played for a while. I think the intensity and the energy, I don't think they could cope with us. And I think on a different day, you know, the scoreline would have been so different. Obviously, of course, we couldn't quite get the breakthrough. And I think because of that, you know how it goes in football. The more time ticks on, the more pressure there is, the more you're pushing. And, you know, the goal they scored at the end wasn't reflective of the game or how we played, but it was... Our downfall was the fact that the two games before that we'd really let ourselves down. And yeah, I think to lose three in a row is a really hurtful place for a team. You know, I think I've said this as well before, don't remember the last time, if I ever have, lost three games in a row as a Scotland player, which, you know, there's two parts to that. One, that's a reflection of how well we've performed consistently over the last 12 years. But also it's a reflection of the fact that we need to make sure we understand that we need to make positive changes to make sure we get back to winning ways.
Yeah, definitely. And it's, I suppose, really important to get the next few months right in terms of these two games. And then we've obviously got the new head of girls and women's football coming in, a new head coach as well. With, you know, there is an exciting time coming up for the national team, and important that we get those right.
Yeah, I think that's always got to be the outlook. And I think there's been time, like I've said, we've reflected and you identify things you want to change, but now it's very much about being forward focused. There's lots of good. I think it's great that there's a new head of women's and girls football role, and I think that's something that, you know, we've needed to have. I think we need to have clear direction, and it's exciting to know that there's going to be that, and there's going to be standards that we're going to have to push to make those forward steps again. I think it's normal, you know, you can't always be on a forward trajectory, and so this little dip is okay, as long as we say we put in place some strategies to make sure that we start to get back to the winning ways and get back to hopefully qualifying for tournaments in the next opportunity.
Now, we've looked at your career. There's 120 caps, 120 caps to go through, and you've selected sort of three key matches to focus on. Now, I thought you were going to go for your debut, but you don't remember anything about it. Am I right? I thought you would have.
We got beat 3-0, and it was very memorable for what it was. But I think it was three.
Right, okay.
Maybe it was two. I think we should move on quick.
So the one that you've gone for is Spain against Scotland. It was a massive game, Euro 2013 playoff. Played the first one at Hampden in front of a record crowd at the time, over 4,000. And then we go away from home. It's 1-1. We lose 3-2. And yeah, if people thought that the heartbreak in the World Cup was bad, this was another level, wasn't it?
Yeah, did I pick this or did you?
You picked it, which I was surprised by.
Okay. Well, I think when you're talking memorable games, I think it
our key
it
matches,
was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in amongst all that as well, you know, I also ruptured my ACL, so that added to things on a personal level. And I can remember being, I was stretchered off in sort of 60, 70, somewhere between 60 and 70 minutes. I think it was 1-1. It was definitely 1-1 because I remember Emma Mitchell equalised, and it might have been our first goal for the senior team. Yeah. And I can remember sliding at the back post, and it was a great goal. Yeah. Anyways, I get stretchered off, and I came back out into the stand. So I can remember coming down these steps on crutches, and it was right as it was already gone to extra time. Kim had scored to make it 2-1. And I just remember hopping around with my crutches in the air, and Suzanne Grant was sprinting down she was on the bench, sprinting down the touchline, Klinsmann celebration, everything. And then, yeah, just, we were under a lot of pressure. At that time, Spain still are, obviously, but they were the real favourites. So, you know, it was tight, but they were definitely piling on the pressure. And Then, of course, they scored, I think, 118th and then 120 plus two. So, yeah, that was devastating.
Because Gemma also saved a penalty, didn't she?
And Gemma had saved a penalty, yeah. Which I think she'd already also done in the home game.
Right. So you've done so much and then it's just not enough.
Yeah. And, yeah, it was just... I can just picture, you know, players at the end, like Joe Love was just face down in the grass, just crying her eyes out amongst, I think, most others. It kind of sounds strange for something so sad to be maybe like a memorable moment that I think's probably in turn turned into like quite a key sort of transition or point in my career. Because I think up to that point, I'd had a fair, and I still did. I was working as an accountant, worked at Ernst & Young. And in a way, rupturing my ACL came at the perfect time because I was just about to sit my final professional exams to become a chartered accountant. And I'd already been told, you're not going to be able to work for Ernst & Young, play football and study. There isn't enough hours in the day. Like, even if you didn't ever go to bed, there still wouldn't be enough hours in the day. So in a way, it was a blessing for that because it meant, yeah, I was working hard in rehab, but I also had a lot of extra time to study. And then I pretty much was finished coming towards the end of that sort of rehab process of 7-8 months. I'd passed my final exam in the May, came back in the August. And I think it was around that time when I then sort of made the transition into deciding, okay, I'm going to put the accounting on hold and try and take on a professional opportunity, which I then did in sort of the turn of the year when I went down to Notts County in the WSL. So it, I suppose that's kind of like one game merged into the course of 12 months, but it probably was just a really key moment to kind of had a decision to make, you know, how hard are you going to work through this rehab to get back to the top level? And then not just get back to the top level, but the top level has then moved because most of us at the time probably were amateur, I think, still within the squad. There wasn't too many players who were a full-time, truly full-time professional environment. So, you know, it was quite a big jump, I suppose, from going from having to like do all the rehabilitation to then get yourself into doing this full-time and as the game's progressing. So, yeah, I think that's a key game.
When you were going through that rehab process, did you ever think about that you would just go and work at Ernst & Young permanently and give up football? Was that ever in your mind, or was it always you were really focused to get back playing?
There was definitely times when you were just fed up. So there probably was times when I was like, "This, I'm done with this." I don't think I ever had the thought of I'll never play football again. But there are times when you think, I don't know if I will get back to as good. And there are times as well when it actually just hurts. You know, the operation is fairly straightforward. You know that it's been done so many times now. It's such a common injury. And the rehab process has been studied and studied and studied. And there's so much, you know, data on how best to do it. And you feel confident from that perspective. But at the same time, you have also had surgery. And there's, you know, bumps in the road. You pull your calf or the other leg, you do something to the leg because it's compensated. All these little things that you just, you know, you're so focused on getting your knee right that's just the surgery. You kind of don't ignore, but sometimes other parts get forgotten about and then they cause issues and it's very much an up and down sort of road, but you do get there. And so I don't think I was ever at a point where I won't play football, but there was times when I was like, I don't know if I'll be back in the national team, but I suppose that's then the time when you're just grateful that you have other focuses and certainly sitting the final CA exams, plenty to focus on. Yeah.
And I spoke to Leanne Crichton before we came on this, and she said that she helped you through your rehab, is that right?
Yeah. I think we were flatmates at the time. I literally had this one bag of frozen, or two bags of frozen peas that I used from like day one of coming out of surgery to then, I mean, probably not the very end, but
The same bag?
It was this like famous bag of frozen peas.
Right.
And I was like, Leanne, can you get the peas out of the freezer?
So that's what you've got to thank for the rehab then.
She'll be raging upset. No, but it was probably a really good time to have someone who you lived with that was also sort of had similar ambitions. And I can definitely remember we both used to, the sessions at that time, you know, when you'd go to the gym in the morning sessions, you had to get up at 5:50 or whatever it was to be in the gym for 6:30. And there was a lot of time, we spoke about this after, we never spoke about it at the time, but you could hear if the other person in the room was up. So like your alarm would go and you'd do that thing, especially when it was cold and like winter nights, you'd be like, I don't think I'll go today. I think I'll maybe just wait another hour. But then you'd hear the other one get up and then you'd be like, Leanne's up, so I have to get up. And then we spoke about it after and she'd have similar mornings where she'd be like, I'm not doing it. But then if she heard me move, she'd be like, if Rachel's doing it, I have to do it. And we probably had, that was like a combination of wanting to help each other, make sure we did everything that we could possibly do at the time, but also that competitiveness of, I'm not letting them get the advantage over me. If she's going, I'm going. And so, yeah, there's probably lots of stories. We used to,
well, she said that
pizza pasta nights, day before games, and
right, okay,
just good things there, good memories.
She said that she dared you to race her single-legged on a rowing machine. How did that go?
Yeah, I actually think it was really close. So we'd gone to the gym one day, and I must have been fairly early on in my rehab because I couldn't, the motion of being on a rowing machine, you know, like bending and straightening your knee, like my left knee didn't bend very far at all. So I was like, right, I'll row single-legged. And I just remember I was so nearly sick. As soon, like, I had one of those moments where I think we were doing like a race 500 metres. So you had to just do 500 metres as fast as you could. And I think I just literally, once I'd finished, like just toppled off the side and just lay on the floor for a few minutes.
Did you win?
No. It was close though. It's a fair effort for being just the one leg.
Yeah. And now the second game that you've picked is far more positive memory. Poland against Scotland in the World Cup 2019 qualifiers. It's your 100th cap. So first of all, what did that mean to reach 100 caps for your country, especially after going through what you'd gone through just a few years earlier?
Yeah, it's probably a moment that at the time you don't appreciate for what it is, because especially that game, because there was so much at stake and the result was obviously huge for us in that qualifying campaign. But then I think afterwards you just realise that it's, you know, anyone that has 100 caps for a country is an incredible achievement. And yeah, you never have the expectation you'll get there. And I think it's totally true that every time you're selected and you play for your country, it's just, you value that as the greatest privilege every time. So to have then done that 100 times is, of course, a special milestone. And yeah, I'm really, really glad that we managed to win, because that wasn't looking too good for 78 minutes.
Yeah, because it was, so we're 1-0 down at halftime,
mm-hmm.
and then 2-0 down, Sophie Howard scores an own goal, and then we start to get back into it.
Well, we were 2-0 down, I don't think they'd had a shot at goal, because the first goal was a cross that got deflected.
Yep.
And then the second one was a cross that Sophie went to clear, and yeah.
So at that point, when you're 2-0 down, I mean, it was obviously looking tough, because I remember thinking, if it's 2-0, then I think the next game was Switzerland at home, and then, yeah, that would have been really tough to come back from that. What were you thinking on the pitch at that point? Obviously, you've got a really resilient group of players there.
Yeah, I think for some reason, I remember just thinking we weren't done. I think because we'd been on top the whole game and we were really pushing for an equaliser when we went 2-0 down. So I just remember thinking, we're not done. We just need to get a goal. And I mean, I knew we would get a chance. So in my head, I'm thinking we just need to get one goal, obviously. And then we can focus on getting a second goal. And so I just remember kind of saying, you know, like, come on, we'll get a chance. Just stay positive, stay focused, whatever. And then, of course, we did get a goal. And then something, I don't know, you just get a feeling sometimes in games where you just feel like you have enough to get there. And there was just a feeling about that game that I just knew that we had it in us. And then, yeah, and we did. And we got the first goal. And then I remember sort of the feeling of that and knowing there's still actually a lot of time. And then there seemed to be a long space of time between the first goal and the second goal, even though there wasn't. But I remember thinking in the game like that, we just couldn't quite get
minutes,
it.
Yeah.
But then you look at the numbers and you're like, oh, we actually scored virtually straight away.
Yeah.
But in the game, it felt like the longest time. Mm-hmm. And then obviously the winner was that kind of exciting, euphoric, happy moment.
And then I suppose that really gives you momentum then going into the next two qualifiers, because it really was, you know, we were up against it in that game, managed to come through it, and then everyone came into the next games against Switzerland and Albania on a real high, didn't they?
Yeah, I think the way we started against Switzerland might be the best 10 minutes we've ever had.
I want to ask you a question about that. See, when you scored, because you scored the first goal and then the second, and for both goals, you were right up and you almost did a huddle. And what were you saying in that huddle at that point? Just like, calm down.
Sorry, I've just been playing my microphone. Yeah, I think I literally was like, just take a minute and breathe. Because
it's 100 miles an hour, isn't it?
Yeah. I know, it's funny because when you do see the pictures of it and you watch the video, it does look like I'm taking a team huddle after every goal. Which I think we were all just quite happy to be. I think it's just I probably was speaking because, but there could also have been a few others talking nonsense in the same moment. But it's where I think the camera angle is from. It looks like I'm kind of ordering the ship around. But I think we were all just on the same wavelength of, it's about 6 minutes into the game here. There's a long time we need to just stay with a game plan, because of course we had the game plan to go out there and have a great start, but no one probably envisaged 2-0 after such a short period of time. So yeah, I think everyone was just like, whoa, this is great, but we need to be mindful that there's now another 86 minutes left to go, and you know, Switzerland are now going to come at us, which we already knew how good a team they are and how good especially sort of their front line is and their attacking options. So I think it was probably just a moment of calm, and then of course they did score. So I think we did really well actually in the fact that they did score and we managed to just sustain that lead. And then, to be honest, we actually thought at the end of the game that we'd kind of messed up again, because the result actually wasn't enough in itself to mean that we would qualify as the top seeds had both of us finished our last games. But we did also know that their game was against Poland and ours was against Albania. So we did kind of feel that we maybe quite hadn't done enough, but then we did also have a little bit of hope that, okay, that's not the easiest fixture for them. And we had done enough. I think it was mathematically enough to be in the playoffs at least, which, not that our record's so great in the playoffs, but, you know, that arguably was what was still kept us in it and still kept the kind of dream alive.
And then this leads us on to the third match that you've picked, which was against USA. So that game sort of struck me as a surprise that you chose that one, just because of all the other matches. But what was it about this one that was so special? It was our first one after we'd qualified, so there was a huge buzz about it, and obviously with the World Cup champions coming to town, it was something that was eagerly anticipated.
Yeah, I think for me, there were the World Champions. I think I've always wanted to play against the US, and obviously I've played there, and this will be my seventh season now, and so I now have a lot of sort of friends and at the time, current club teammates who played for the national team. And I think, I mean, you want to play the best team in the world. That's a game that you should want as a player, I believe. And we'd previously had the chance to go and play them. I think it was January 2013. And that was when I was also rehabbing from my knee. So I'd missed that trip to America back then. And you know, even when you speak to some of the girls who did go on that, it's like one of a lot of the players' most memorable trip or one of them. So I knew I'd kind of missed that. And I think it was just a game I really looked forward to. And I think one thing was as well, was really proud of how we actually played that game, because I know the game finished and we did get beat 1-0, but I think we had chances in the game. And I also think there were spells in the game where we played really well. And there was players, you know, Carly Lloyd after the game said to a number of players how surprised is maybe not a great word to use, but she was so complimentary of how well we'd played. And she said to so many players how we have such a great team and we have such a great chance to do well at the World Cup. And I think, you know, for someone of her stature to say that, I think for a lot of the girls was just a huge lift and huge encouragement. And then, as I say, there was friends that day who played. You know, Becky Sauerbrunn was my club teammate, player I played centre-back with for 2 years, and she obviously was playing. And so I think those moments are nice, because I suppose when you get a little older, you appreciate the friendships that you've built over time and appreciate the people who've had an impact on you. And she's someone who definitely has had a big impact on me. And, you know, that goes beyond before the years we played in the same team together, but she's considered one of the best centre-backs ever. And so I think for me, that was just a really nice game. And it was great for it to be in Scotland, great to have a home crowd, great for, I think, fans to see that and just see us perform against a team like the US. So I think for me, it was just a game that I look on just fondly. I think, yeah, I probably need to see a list of all the games, and there's maybe some others that we'd also make the cut. But when you asked sort of three games, those were kind of the first three that came to mind kind of first off. So
did you get a good match shirt from that game against USA? Did you get one off the US players?
I don't think I did. I think me and Becky have still promised each other, but I think that's something that I'll chase it up for it one day.
Have you got any good bits of memorabilia from your career? What's the best parts you've got? Do you collect much or not?
I'm not great at that. I think probably my favourite things are sort of the match shirts. I think I love going home and seeing I have, you know, the England game from the first from the Euros. And then I also have obviously the shirts from the World Cup, and even, you know, the shirt from the Jamaica game, I think at Hampden, you know, that was another game that was also quite very memorable in its own right. So shirts are probably the biggest things. I've not been someone who I think swapped shirts with too many players, so I don't think I have yet, but I'd go with that. My mum was looking through some old things actually this week though, and she did send me a picture, which I don't know if I'm willing to share with you.
Yeah, definitely do that.
But it's a picture. It must be from like 2007. It's right. From the under-19s championships, I think it must have been. And there's me. There's a few players that Jane Ross. I think I was 17 maybe. Jane Ross, Jenny, Kim. There's a few old faces.
Yeah, we need that for the social media, I'm sure.
So my mum sent that, and yeah, it's probably not my best haircut, but
right, okay. Because I've heard that when you were a bit younger, especially in that under-19s group, that you were quite shy, and when you first came in, you know, how have you sort of changed as a person since then?
A lot, I would say. I was very shy because, one, being from the north is daunting because you're different from
different.
Well, no, clearly not, but when you're like 15 and 16, if you speak slightly different and somebody calls you out on it, you feel like you're an alien.
So was that tough then, coming into that environment?
Yeah, I used to hate it. I used to count the sleeps till you would go home.
So were you not close to like Kim and all that at that age, or?
Not really, but Kim wasn't involved in a lot of the squads with me at that point, because I never made the cut for sort of the initial, like under 15s, under 16s and under 17s. I never was selected. So I kind of got thrown in a year early to under 19s, and therefore almost I felt like a bigger outcast almost, because to me, everybody there knew each other, everyone there had been there before. And I was this girl from the north that nobody knew, that had kind of came out of nowhere and probably had taken someone's spot that was friends with people who were already there. So at that age as well, you're so self-conscious that, like I say, you talk differently and people kind of call you out for it, probably like in a joking way to try and include you. But in that moment, it feels like the most embarrassing thing ever.
Is that why you've got your American accent? No, you're in America. I had to drop it in at some point.
Yes.
Is it?
No. Do you know what? Somebody told me once that if you try and talk in the accent of, or talk in a manner that the people you're speaking to talk in, it's a sign of empathy. And I quite like that rationale. So in my head, I'm going with it because I'm a very empathetic person.
Right, okay.
And but I think looking back, like under 19s was a big learning curve and, you know, persevered.
Yeah, paid off. 120 caps later.
Yeah.
Now, so looking back in your time, I feel like no one really speaks about the characters in the women's game.
Mm.
And there's a lot. So you've got your Erin Mitchell, Lisa Evans, Erin Cuthbert in this squad. Have you got any sort of funny memories of your teammates, of your time with the national squad?
Oh, I think for me, Suzanne Grant is still probably one of the greatest characters that I've probably played with. And in terms of, she just always was looking to play a prank on somebody. But always had a positive, you know, it was never to make fun of anybody in a hurtful way. It always was just entirely for a laugh. When I first got in the squad, we used to always go to Cyprus at this time of year. And there was always this mini tournament called the Cyprus Cup. And you'd go for, it was 10, 11 days you'd go for. And it was sort of the longest camp typically where you'd be away for the entire time. You know, yeah, you'd play double headers for a similar time, but half that time would be spent in Scotland. So it was considered quite a long trip. So naturally, you know, you're looking for things. And she was always the one to do that. I remember one year she did an entire sketch. Have you seen that? Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
You have seen it?
Yeah, Anna rolled out at the 2017 Euros. Yeah, but for those who haven't seen it, tell us what it was like.
She just does this, and it must have gone on for what, like 20 minutes? It goes on, took her most of the camp.
In depth, yeah.
It's like amazing she even managed to train and play games because the amount of video work that was required.
Did she do it all? She cut and edited this video of, so basically impersonated all the staff.
And one of the videos was Anna falling off the balcony, and we had this like blow up doll that went like flying off the balcony into the pool.
And how it was, did Anna respond when she saw this?
Anna thought it was the funniest, you know, like that could go one of two ways. That could be like the end of the trip for people, and it'd be like beds by 7 p.m. and, you know, just whatever. But Anna thought it was the funniest thing ever imaginable. And like you say, like she pulls it back out.
Euro 2017, she called all the staff for a meeting, and it was late at night, and we're all like, "What's this?" And she's like, "Right, let's watch this." And it was like her getting a blow up of her with a wig on, getting launched off a balcony.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
So things like that. She used to, I know, I remember just the other little things. I think one of the girls had a bag of like jelly babies or something, and it was like, and she hung them from the bridge over the pool or something, and like she put a big moth in her mouth, and it was like, do you dare me to put this in my mouth? And everyone was kind of like, no, not really. And she was like, well, I'm going to do it anyway. That was, you know, you just spent your evenings when you had like an hour of free time just trying to find Suzanne to see what she was up to, because probably would have been a better time than not being with Suzanne.
Brilliant. And then on to some sort of quick fire questions just to finish us off. If you could be another Scotland teammate for the day, who would you be and why?
Oh, I meant to think about this and I haven't. I would pick, I'd pick maybe Erin.
Right.
One, because I'd love to play up front and just have a shot at that. That would be great. But more so because I just think she's so much younger than me that I think it would be so interesting to be her agent in the game now, because I just think my, when I was her age, you know, 10 years ago, the game looked so different, and so naturally you kind of would maybe like to do it all again.
Why do you and Leanne Crichton call each other 20?
Because we're very similar, even mannerisms, but there was a spell where we must have had always wore our hair the same at football, when we both played for Glasgow City, and the parents who'd always come to the games just thought we always looked alike, that we were twins. So that's kind of where it started. And then obviously we lived together, and we're just always doing things as a pair, so it just kind of stuck.
When you speak about similar mannerisms, you were very similar in the dying moments of that Argentina game. the two of you really did like take the lead in that, because it was, you know, such a chaotic situation. But I do remember at the time, and even when you look back, it was you two were right there a lot. Like, you were with the ref, you were with the Argentina players. You know, what was that like? Because it was the two of you, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think that just that happened quite naturally, and probably is the perfect reflection of the fact that we're very similar in a lot of ways. And yeah, those were probably moments of a lot of passion, which I think we probably struggle to hide that when it comes to competitive sport, maybe more than others.
What was the first time you met Kim Little?
I don't fully know, because I would have played against Kim a lot before I knew her. And so I probably was sort of 9 or 10, or 10 maybe, when we first played against each other.
Was she always spoken about in Aberdeen as being the next big thing, or was that you?
Obviously that was me.
Yeah.
No, so she was actually from Mintlaw, which is quite a bit further north. So she was almost a different region than me when we were growing up. So we really only just played against each other. And I would probably say, I mean, by the time I was sort of 15, 16, we obviously knew each other. And we'd had kind of crossovers with national team and under 19s. But I wouldn't have said our friendship became so close until we actually both were in America, which is quite funny because I've literally known her since I was 10, but it probably took until I was kind of 24, 25 for us to become really good friends, which I think is just, it's again just another example of, it's, you know, you meet people throughout your career, and it's nice to build friendships and relationships that can last. There's some,
yeah,
some
just as the window. It's just as we're recording this, Erin Cuthbert's walking by the window. We've got a few of your teammates arriving. Lisa
and
as well.
Our full tracksuit.
I suppose that's the key thing about this, isn't it? That a lot of these players are your friends as well, so it's nice to come away and see your friends.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, because you won't always be playing football. And so it's nice to have, you know, friendships are the things that can last beyond that, and also then when there are some really great memories, it adds to kind of the special nature of them when you get to do them with people who are considered your best friends. So there's a lot of elements to making sure that you know the people you meet along the way, and being a good person and becoming good friends, has so much value.
Most embarrassing moment?
Oh, I think doing my speech after my first cap.
Right. Oh, yeah, because that's the thing that you do. You make people do a speech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I don't know why it's embarrassing, because every single person stands up and literally just says, thanks so much. I hope there's many more to come, and really appreciate all my teammates. It's like...
What did you say?
The most rigid speech, and it's terrible. I probably said a version of that.
Did you prepare it? Did you have it written down, or did you just
stand up. You just get thrown under the bus. I didn't even know what was happening.
And what was embarrassing about it? Just, you felt really embarrassed?
Oh, just, yeah, being 19 years old and speaking in front of a group of 20 others.
Right, so now you're the captain, you can change that. But you just think, well, if I had to do it, then anyone else is going to have to do it as well.
Pretty much.
Right, okay.
No,
still holding that grudge, nice.
I think it's changed. I think there are people who've escaped of late. I don't think we've forced people to do it recently. I think there's been some leniency. So it's joke. Now I think it's said it's almost like a joke in a team meeting. People are like, oh, speech. And if they get up and do it, we let them go. And if they kind of resist, we're like, ah, move on.
Have you got any pre-game rituals?
No. That's a boring answer to that, but no, nothing, I wouldn't have said.
I thought it was like, because I know, I remember you speaking like that you always, you like to like travel to a game like, you know, dressed well and all that sort of stuff. Is that not something in America?
I'm a bit like OCD and I like to, the only things I would say, I like to make sure I eat certain things at certain times and like, and then traveling to the games, like, I hate being early is the only thing. But I don't want to be late, don't get, but like, there's nothing worse when you arrive like 20 minutes before you need to be there and you're just sat in the changing rooms. Yeah, I don't really, I don't have anything that's a ritual, I don't think.
Last text or WhatsApp message you sent?
Oh. I think I actually text Lisa to say I'm about to do a podcast with Michael.
Safe answer, nice. Well, thanks a lot, Rachel. We've covered a lot there. Really enjoyed that. All the best for the upcoming games. Thanks again for joining the Scotland National Team podcast.
Thank you.